Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELEC 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM, a part of the Beasley Media Group, and 97.5 HD2, Jeff. We always forget to mention that. Ready to help you move into the weekend, talking about all the news in the world of sports. Dynamite dropping money. All right, everybody. We got
Isn't that your dream? You always wanted to be on the deuce?
That's right. We got Keith Pompey joining us in a few minutes when we connect to him on Zoom. We'll pot him up on the show. But Jeff, I will start with my weekly question. Did you watch Thursday Night Football?
No, I did not watch it because I did not want to watch Urban Meyer.
Oh, come on, man.
Although, had I known that he was going to have his little temper tantrum afterwards and talk about how he knows they're so much better.
If there was ever a game for you to enjoy the...
How many games did he lose total when
not
he was
as many
Ohio
as
State?
He's lost in a row in the NFL right now. If you ever were going to enjoy the ecstasy and then agony of Urban Meyer in front of you on TV, it was the game last night, which actually turned into a rather entertaining game by the time it was done. At the whistle at the end, and it was an entertaining thing to watch. You missed it, Jeff.
So here's the important thing for all those Urban Meyer haters, of which I am one.
Yes.
He now goes down in history right now as the part of the longest losing streak, second longest losing streak in NFL history.
I'm sure that makes
And soon he could make the longest NFL history.
I'm sure that makes you very, very happy.
It does. Watching him go, because I do have a concern. Whether his heart's going to be okay.
Because I don't wish for health or anything.
No, I don't. I want him to be okay, but if you remember why he left Florida.
I know. You don't believe the original Florida excuse of his heart problems. I get it. But for our listeners who don't remember, he said he had heart problems, left Florida, and then was at Ohio State like a couple days later, basically. Magically was cured.
Leaving behind a train wreck of a program.
So we'll leave that game there. If you weren't watching that, were you just watching the end of the Phillies
Bengals
season?
Jaguars. I don't understand how that appeals to anybody, including people in Jacksonville and Cincinnati.
I'm not sure. I guess it's part of the rotation. Like every team gets a Thursday night game, so they just decided to not.
The NFL Network has decided that it does not want to be successful, is what I can conclude. Because you would think they would have total power over which games they actually get for their own network, and they pick the worst games every week.
Well, they're trying not to like take away eyeballs from their Sunday night game, which they're got like the Adele song as a part of the marketing for
There are over a dozen games every week. They can't say, okay, we'll take the second worst game instead of the worst game every week.
Are you excited it's football season? Like, I know you're I know you're a tortured fan to begin with because of who you root for, and I obviously had the fun of watching the Eagles on Monday night, which we'll get to, unfortunately.
Yeah, I got the text from my kid. 0-17 was what I got the text of.
I'm sure you appreciate
it. And I'll get it
much.
Every week until they win, they ever win.
Did you write back to him after the Eagles lost to Dallas with the score?
Yes, I wrote back. I said there's no W in Eagles.
So that's actually the reason I didn't text you during the Giants game, is I had concerns about the Eagles game, and I didn't want to just get it back, which was also why I didn't text you during the Rutgers-Michigan game.
Has there ever been a point in your sports fandom that you have gone into a game or a season where you have felt confident?
No.
Even in the 2000s?
That pretty much sums up everything.
I think the closest I've been to confident was when the Eagles signed Terrell Owens in 2004. I think that season, the excitement going into it.
And that went off the rails.
Well, they made it to the Super Bowl. Just kind of didn't work out.
It was
the next season that worked out really well. You know, it didn't end well, but, you know, what can you do? But I think that's the only time I've actually felt confident as a fan going into a season. I mean, this season, you know, I have no expectations. Like I was telling you before the show, when we did the season picks, I had them at 6-11. And now last week I went through it and I'm having a hard time getting to the sixth win.
Oh. So what are the five?
So you would think they would win one against Washington and one against the Giants. Okay. So at least they split. Because, you know,
that's
whatever.
Three.
Okay, then they play the Jets.
That's four.
And then they play the Lions.
That's five.
And that'll be a competitive game because the Lions are better.
Yes.
But, like, the sixth I had assumed would be Carolina.
But the Eagles don't have a kicker who can kick it over 65 yards.
That was crazy. Did you see that Justin Tucker kick?
Is he the greatest kicker in the history of the NFL?
By the way, is Keith just going to make us talk the whole show?
I'm pretty sure. Well, there are stories breaking left and right. So if we don't get him, I think we have to understand.
I don't know what stories you're talking about.
Chaos.
It's a quiet week in Camden. There's nothing going on with the Sixers. It's just a regular ho-hum training camp.
You would have thought that they would get through at least the first week before the whole Ben Simmons thing would blow up.
No, that was the whole reason he didn't want to be here.
Apparently, they only were able to do it for 3 days.
All right. Let's talk about a little bit before Keith gets on, because we'll ask him the actual facts. Mm-hmm. But right now, we can just speculate on the speculation and the reports, which you can't stand anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What do you believe of what you're hearing out there? So far, we've seen reports from all different people that Ben is willing to sit out. The Sixers believe they don't have to pay him.
Well, wait, are you going to ask me 17 different facts and then ask me to go back, or you want to go one at a time?
Yeah, because if I ask you 17 questions, that's a boring show. It's me talking a lot with you answering a couple
questions. But I don't want you to give me like this run-on question and then let me have to remember, because I don't have the memory that I can go back and do all
that. So we've arrived at the real problem.
Exactly. It's my memory.
All right. What's your take on where it is now in terms of ugliness?
Well, we can establish a couple things based on what we've seen. I'll go with the lawyer, Jeff. Okay. So
the facts of the case, counselor.
Whether Ben Simmons is going to hold out. Yes, he hasn't shown up. He's not there. So we know he's not here.
But today was a significant day.
Because he didn't get paid.
Because for our listeners, the way his contract was written, he was due $8 million today. I believe he still owed $8 million from July, so they owed like $16 million in total, but $8 million was due today.
Well,
and the question was, were they going to pay him the money if he didn't report? And the answer appears to be right now,
he ain't getting his money.
You know, we'll see what Keith's hearing about it. He may be writing about it now. We'll see. We're obviously on the radio, but if you believe all the things you're reading out there, Ben's not going to have $8 million deposited
in
his bank account
today.
Ben is
never, after what Embiid said, not that he was going to beforehand, but he's not coming.
Have you ever?
Ben is the most thin-skinned athlete you can imagine, and that was before this. And Joel, who I guess doesn't have that thick a skin either, decided that when the report came out that Ben thinks that the Sixers were building around Joel decided that was it. That was the end of it.
So
and Joel should not have done what he did. As great as it is for us, as great as it is for reporters, what he should not have done is said what he said. Because now their chances to get anything good has gone down, and then he decided to break his own story about Jimmy Butler in the middle of that.
So how surprised were you that happened yesterday? For our listeners, Joel didn't hold back. He said, our teams have always been built around his needs, referring to Ben. So it's just kind of surprising to see, even going back to the reason we signed Al, meaning Horford.
Yep.
We got rid of Jimmy, meaning Butler, which I still think was a mistake, just to make sure he needed the ball in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't be more about your opinion about what went on than that.
By the way, I don't believe that part of the story. I don't think that's the reason they got rid of Jimmy. I think that there was more to it than that, than just Ben. But the fact is, the team has had to be built around Ben and not Joel, because Joel is a diverse center. He can play outside. He can play inside. We get frustrated sometimes that he plays outside so much. You had to build around your other star because he was unwilling to use the skills that he's supposed to be able to have if you're a point guard. So he's right about that. The question is whether or not he should have said it and whether it was in the best interest of his team to say it.
So that's Joel's side.
Yeah.
Could Ben's side be handling this any worse?
No.
No. Like from an actual basketball side.
I would like to find the person in the NBA, whether it be front office, coach, player, ball boy, ball girl, locker room attendant, that would agree that Ben is handling this in any semblance of a mature way. He could not look like less of a good teammate than he has acted throughout this whole situation. And wherever he goes, they are going to have to cringe and hope that it works out, because Ben is the biggest sulker that you could possibly imagine.
This is part of the problem, too.
He caused this.
People will say, well, Ben's not saying anything. No, but the people are speaking on his behalf, and he could stop it if he didn't want it out there. And this is, you know, there's many who believe, and obviously...
Here's the thing that you that people should always understand. If you're represented by counsel, you can take the advice of counsel, or you can decide that you want to do what you want. They work for you, okay? So if any of this is not true, it's pretty simple. Ben can go out and talk. Ben's in hiding.
So I'm asking,
where is he?
I'm going to ask you a question, because you dropped a note in here that... Under the NBA news portion, not the Sixers portion, but I think it's a really nice contrast with Ben.
Oh, the Dan.
And
the
what's
Lillard
happened
situation.
This offseason.
Just so to make Sixers fans
Damian
a little less
Lillard
happy.
Said that watching Giannis win a title in Milwaukee has made him even more motivated to stay in Portland and win one there. So your question to me was, do you believe him or is he just saying the right things? But before I answer that, because no, I don't believe him. I think he wants out of Portland, and right. I think he's handling it the way a superstar who wants to leave should handle it.
Wait, you just answered the question.
I answered your question, right. But my question is, would Ben Simmons ever have the maturity to do that? To look himself in the mirror and say, it makes me want it more? Because so far, he's looked at everybody else and said, it's your fault.
Ben doesn't care about winning. When have you ever thought that Ben cared about winning? He didn't. All Ben cares about is Ben. This is pretty simple. We could drop the mic right here. But the whole thing with Lillard, I do believe him. I believe that
it motivates him more.
Wait,
I don't
you had
it.
Your chance.
All right.
I believe that when Dame Lillard says that I watched Giannis and it made me want to win in Portland more, that he has been part of that community for long enough that he does want it to succeed. Whether or not you get to the trade deadline and the latest Portland experiment fails is a whole different thing. But I believe that he's come into the season committed. What I do know is that Ben has come into the last at least four seasons not committed, because the thing that he can't do is the thing that you can work on. Free throws are practice. That simple.
He can shoot them, though. He doesn't want to.
No, he's afraid to.
Yes,
that's his whole
exactly.
different situation.
So it's not about...
No, but he's not a great free throw shooter.
No.
But he can become a better one by practice, and that's what he's not doing.
Shaq called out Ben, says he's going about it the wrong way. You have to look in the mirror and say, am I as good as I can be? He's going about it all wrong. He could have gone into the office and say, hey, my feelings are hurt. You guys didn't stick up for me. I'd like to professionally ask for a trade. The question is, does anyone want him? I'm not paying $200 million for a guy who will not be aggressive and will not shoot at playoff time. Is that what Daryl Morey is encountering now as the Sixers try to move him? Who wants to pay $200 million for the product they saw on the floor as opposed to the potential that everybody thought has been there?
Okay.
Is that the problem that they're running into now? That they just, because I have told you, I think eventually they will do the Portland deal. Even though that's not the sexy
deal
that everybody wants.
Yeah, but the Portland deal you're talking about is McCollum, not Lillard.
Not Lillard.
Right.
I think that they will get McCollum and Covington in a draft pick. And I am of the opinion that I don't want to give other players that we think are going to be a part of this up, because we have to throw good money to get rid of our bad money that we've spent for our player who is sulking and doesn't want to be here.
You would not try, when you say you don't want to give up other players, you obviously valued him more than I did since day one with regard to Maxi. Are you telling me that if it were Simmons and Maxi in a pick for Dame Lillard, you wouldn't do it?
I'll consider that more, but what I don't
want to
do...
No, I want an answer, not I'll consider it. The deal's on the table right now. I'm calling you as Portland, and I'm offering that deal, and you're in charge of the Sixers right now. You doing it? Yes or no?
Yes, I would do it. Right. I would do it because of Embiid and his age and his health. But what I don't like is that I am basically throwing away good money. Tyree, he's going to be a player in the league.
Why are you throwing away good money?
Because you have to get rid of Ben, because you didn't handle this right, and he didn't handle
it. If you get Lillard...
You're not getting Lillard because you wanted him at the start. You're getting him because you're over a barrel and have to get rid of him. That's the best you can get, which I think is a better option. But their intent—I'm
only looking at it from the
their intent was never to have Lillard. Their intent was to make it work with Simmons.
Well,
they're
yeah.
doing it because they can't make it work with Simmons.
Well, I—that's the one thing I disagree with. We criticize the Sixers a lot over the years. We've had to endure the whole process thing. This is not the Sixers' fault. The only thing the Sixers can be blamed for is trying too much to try to make this work. They should have gotten rid of him a year earlier. No. They thought they could make this work, and the problem was it was never going to work because Ben wasn't committed to it.
It is the Sixers' problem because they set the preconditions of coddling him when he was drafted. That is why it is the Sixers' problem, because he didn't like it when they finally tried to crack down and not accept his effort that he wasn't giving for them.
That wasn't going to make that wasn't going to make him work harder. Look at him. He sits there and he hides.
Then you don't give him the extension then.
You had to.
Well, apparently you didn't.
Well, wait, what were you going to do? Were you just going to let him go for nothing?
Well, now you're going to let him go and trade other pieces, and you don't know what you're going to
get. And you might get something back.
You might.
But you could not let him go under the circumstances
Do you know what I know for sure more than might?
Yeah.
The last time the Phillies made the playoffs, the process hadn't even started yet.
And?
It's a really long time, Jeff.
Oh, well, it's going to be another long time. At this point, I believe what you need to do is you just need to say, all right, Ben, you want to sit home, go fight, go file a lawsuit, whatever the hell you want to do. You go ahead and try to get your check. We're not writing it for you. Okay? So go do what you need to do. If you want to come here, we have told you time and time again that we welcome you here. We want you here. If you're going to bust your butt the way that your teammates are going to do and you want to come in, come. And then, by the way, behind the scenes, if the rest of the league sees that you're willing to at least pretend to be a good teammate, then maybe we can do something. But as long as you're not, we're not just going to give you away for trash.
You burst my bubble because buried in one of Keith's stories about Simmons was Joel Embiid being in noticeably better shape, slimmed down, and you said, that won't last?
No, what I'm telling you, as somebody who's gone to enough media...
That's not the text message I got, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
So as somebody who has gone to a lot of media days, one of the prevailing stories on day one is Joel has come into camp in great shape. He always looks better when he comes down and sits at that podium and answers questions on day one at camp. And then what happens is... And I'm not disparaging Chick-fil-A. I'm just letting you know that Chick-fil-A seems to play a big role once camp starts. I don't know where he's gone that it doesn't play a big role before camp starts, but then all of a sudden the rookies are going and buying him Chick-fil-A. And then as the season goes on, he wears down. Okay, and he doesn't seem to be, and he doesn't seem to be, his muscles don't seem to be defined. And there's look, I hope that's the case. He seemed to have last year turned a corner and be more committed. Maybe the Sixers are actually better as a result of this. Because Maxey will now play point guard, so you'll get that for you. And Embiid now, this is his team.
Yes.
Okay? What he said yesterday was his way of putting his stamp on this.
Yes,
and
this
saying,
is my team.
That's it. By the way, Ben, we don't really care if you come back. You've caused all this, and now we're going to clean up your mess.
So it looks like Shake is going to captain the second unit, and Tyrese is going to be the starter for everything. And we'll catch up with Keith another time, obviously, with the Ben Simmons stuff blowing
up. Yeah, so all the stuff we're talking about now... We all know this because of him, right?
Keith will probably be writing about more of it shortly. You can follow it up, Pompey on Sixers. Actually, he's in the waiting room here, yeah. Jeff. We can put him in and put him up here, let him talk to us in a second. He's joining us. So.
I'm guessing we'll have about 10 seconds with him.
10 seconds of his time.
And he said, let him in. He's literally knocking at the door. He's knocking at the Zoom door.
I connected the audio. Say hi to him, Jeff.
Hey. You there?
There he is.
Hey,
what's up?
I told you this was Tuxedo.
Don't worry, Keith. We just had a whole Sixers conversation. We're all done.
So Keith, look.
I see you.
Here's the problem. You know, we really don't need to have you that long because there's nothing to talk about, right?
Not much going on in camp.
Nah, there's nothing going on. It's just the we're about to see this implosion. You know what it's like? It's like Appalachian State showing up at the big house. And showing them how to play football.
Watch this. Now he's going to say he has to go. He literally got on just to take a shot at Michigan.
I love how you always have a dynamite like Michigan hit ready to go when we start.
Exactly. So I mean, you know, but I'm not the one that took my son to the game.
Yeah, right. There should be questions about parenting there for that. But
all right. So
DHS didn't come get you.
Look, just for everybody that doesn't know, you're getting most of the information from this man. So he's got to go back and he's got to go to work, and he's probably going to have more information. So keep reading his articles and checking out his Twitter. But while we got you for this short time, we got to ask, did Joel know what trouble he was going to cause when he said what he said yesterday?
Oh, he was waiting for it. I mean, he was waiting for you. It was one of those things where, you know, I was working on another story, so I wasn't doing it daily. And Joel typically, you know, it was like the last question. No one asked it. And it was like, they said one question left and then I asked it. But typically Joel is the type of guy, like, he's not always wanting to talk to the media or to get, you know, do his media obligations.
Yeah, we don't usually get him at the end of practice.
So all of a sudden Doc was talking and Joel was just standing there waiting.
Oh,
and everyone asked a question, and then I'm like, well, dang, we need to find out, you know, because that's a question that people want to know, right?
Yep.
Keith got more sources calling him right now, man. It's always connected to everything right there.
So he says, I ask him, and he goes on for 4 minutes. 4 minutes. And you're like, wow. You know, but you know what?
Where was Doc? Where was Doc when this? Where was Doc when as he was?
By that point, Doc was like in his office. Or, you know, at first, he was in his office because it was the last question of probably like a 10, 15 minute interview with him. And that question went on for 4 minutes, you know?
So, all right. Joel plants his flag there. We've seen all the stories about Ben Simmons. Is he going to hold out? What's he going to do? He's obviously not here. The Sixers had to pay him some money today. That not going to happen, Keith?
Oh, what they're doing is they're putting the money in escrow. So it's one of those things where, you know, it's a way, like, it protects the Sixers from, let's say the Sixers paid Ben, but then they're like, hey, you didn't show up. You owe us this money. Well, since the money is in escrow, you know, they could just take it out, you know, and use the fines to it. But see, the one thing that really goes on that people aren't really talking about, rarely are players fined like this. Like, and even when you do try to fine them, like, let's say if they trade Ben Simmons to the Sacramento Kings, right? So Ben's going to look at the Kings and be like, look, y'all want me, right? You know, I'm supposed to be the star, right? So that money that the Sixers fined me, you going to give it to me? Oh, yeah. So that's how it normally happens, you know? So, you know, but the problem with this is when you typically do this, there's typically a point of no return. Like, the player may show up and that he's not going to play, but he may show up and the relationship is torn. Like, it's done.
All right.
So, like, teams, they threaten to do it, but they really don't do it. And now maybe with the escrow, and they can put the money back in or do something like that. But when this typically happens, you might as well say, I'm sorry, bro. We love you. We do this and that. But you got to go. You know what I mean? It's over.
So did they do this? Did they really have the beer muscles to do this on their own? Or was this pushed because of what Joel said yesterday? Did they sit there and say, that's it, what Joel said, he ain't coming back anyway, so we might as well not
have anything to do with it? This is something that they asked to do beforehand. I mean, they tried to do beforehand. You know, like, I guess, you know, right now, let's say it's a matter of calling each other's bluff. And then you got to realize something. The NBA is looking at this saying, wow, we got a guy who just signed a max contract. After his first year, he wants out. And this can be unprecedented. Now, beforehand, people forget, like, Jimmy Jackson, when he played for Dallas his rookie year, he held out until March. Now, again, he didn't sign a contract. He was holding out before contract negotiations. And then you have Tristan Thompson, and you have other guys with Cleveland who had contract extensions that they were waiting to sign and they held out. But you've never had a player who was under contract who wanted out and did this thing that the Sixers are doing, I mean, that Ben Simmons are doing. So with that being said, you got the league, and the league is saying, you know what? We support you, Sixers. Like, we don't, because if they do this, if Ben Simmons gets away with it, then how many other players are going to do it, you know?
All right, so I know you got to go soon. When Joel said what he said, what are you hearing was the reaction of his teammates? Are they all on board, and are they just tired of this? Are they done with Ben?
You know, it's tough because they didn't have practice yesterday, and the only other person we spoke to yesterday was after that. Well, two other people was George Niang Matisse Thybulle. You know what? I don't know if the teammates are sick and tired of it, because I think, like, you got to realize everybody knew. See, what's coming? Like, what I'm writing a story and I'm finding out that the Sixers were actually informed that this was going to happen prior to when they told us. Like, so Ben let them know that he did not want to be back. He told them that he did not want to be back. So I think everyone on the team knew it, you know, and that's part of the reason why he turned them down when they wanted to come out. Like, look, fellas, y'all knew about this 3 days after the season ended. So, you know, I think that when you have teams, yeah, some guys can be upset, but then there's also certain guys who say, look, you got the power to do this. Now, like, this is something else we got to realize. Nerlens Noel kind of sort of did the same thing when he elected to have surgery and not play. And then all of a sudden he comes back and he's traded to the Dallas Mavericks. You know what I mean? So I think that this happens. No one just never been as blatant as Ben Simmons is to say, forget y'all, I'm out.
Well, no doubt this story will keep blowing up and Keith will keep following along and it'll blow up just like your cell phone is over there. So we'll let you go since you're dinging away. We'll get you back on another time. Always appreciate the time. Appreciate the Michigan hate that you give Jeff and everything
else.
Well,
only one of us appreciates that.
Follow at Pompey on Sixers and read you in the paper. Catch all the latest news. Thanks, man.
All right, but guess what? Hell to Pitt, though. He's still a Pitt man, and it works for Michigan.
See, you always find that common ground.
Way to save yourself.
Thanks, Keith, for hopping on. All have right. A good one, man. All right, Jeff. So Keith's obviously got some other news coming there. It just... This is not going in a
Well, you heard part of the news. Part of the news was that Ben told them earlier.
And so, again, you've said the Sixers are not responsible.
Yeah.
Are they then, if they knew earlier and they didn't get something done?
From what I've heard of players who say that they've played for Doc Rivers is that Doc believes he can get you in a room and he can talk you into anything.
Which is why they wanted to go to L.A.
Yeah, and you hear the stories about even when he was with the Celtics. I heard Kendrick Perkins say that, like, you know, he had an issue with Paul Pierce, like, when they first got there. He got him in the office and they straightened it out. And so if Doc believes, that's a mature thing. There's a sense of arrogance to it and confidence, but there's also a sense of maturity that you think that if you can get in a room, you can talk to somebody, you can work something out. The problem is nobody anticipated that Ben at the ripe old age of whatever he is, 26 or whatever it is still so immature that he won't even talk to people. Like, if his teammates say, hey, we want to come talk to you, what would have been the harm of him saying, look, you're not going to change my mind, but I'd love to see you. I'll talk to you about it. And at the end of it, look them in the eye and say, hey, look, I got to do what I think is best, and that's it. That's what an adult does. And for some reason, he can't act like an adult.
Well, we'll leave it there. We'll hit the break. When we come back, Ed Hearn will join us, and we'll talk some baseball, and I'm sure that this Ben Simmons stuff will go on for a while. Stick with us.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.
And we're back. Jeff, are you ready to talk again? We're back on the air.
Yes.
Normally you talk through the return of everything. So I was just seeing, you know, you didn't kind of jump in on that. And so I was seeing if you were still participating in the show today. I just wasn't sure what was going on there.
Oh, I'm not going home now. What are you kidding me?
No, you're very excited for this.
I know we're based in Philadelphia, but we got an 86 Met, and if you have not watched Once Upon a Time in Queens on ESPN, the four-part special on the 86 Mets. It doesn't matter whether you like them. Actually, you probably would like it more if you dislike them.
Explain that to me.
The drama of the season, it was so interesting. The story was so good, and there were such different personalities on it. And one of them is going to come on the show, and I believe he's there now. He's here now. Ed Hearn, are you with us?
Yes, sir. How y'all guys doing?
Doing fantastic. Got a little bit of an echo. If you could talk a little closer to the phone, we can hear you a little louder. For our listeners, World Series champion, former catcher, motivational speaker, author. Ed, thanks so much for giving a few minutes today.
Yeah, you bet. How's that? Sounded good? Better that way?
You sound great.
Go ahead, Jeff. Why don't you kick
off? So, Ed, I found in one of my boxes, I don't know if you can see us. We're also doing this on Zoom. So, Ed, if you can see this, I'm going to hold something up and tell me if you've ever seen it before.
I have not. I'm not on Zoom right now. Oh. You guys can put me on Zoom, but I can get on Zoom.
It's all good. Jeff's holding up a record here for you.
Yeah, so just so you know, I have a fancy copy of the official record of the 1986 New York Mets.
These are the things that Jeff collects.
Yes, where apparently you learned to be an air guitarist.
Yeah, we watched the video, Ed. We've
You guys are talking about the Let's Go Mets video.
That's what we're talking about.
Do you know that that's actually an official part of your Wikipedia bio, that you are known for your role in the 86 Mets video?
Well, you have to find something I'm known for.
It's always good to be known for something. Jeff loved that team, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. We were just having a good time, and I guess there was a bat sitting next to me or something, and the song was, we were getting into it. The directors and producers saying, "Come on, you guys, get into it."
Okay. and apparently nobody held back.
No, we weren't known as a group that held back very often.
So we'll get there, but we wanted to talk to you. First of all, there is news as far as catchers go. So originally on our show today, we were going to make this an all-catcher show, and with you beforehand, we were going to have Pat Borders, but he had a game to go to, so we're going to try to get him on another time. Another Royals catcher at one point, although that's not what he's known best for. But
I'm known best for it either.
there is another Royals catcher who is leading all of baseball in home runs this year. And it's only been done by one other catcher twice, Johnny Bench. And the reason I bring it up is because it made me think, when I saw that today, how hard it is to play that position defensively and still bat. Can you explain to us, as a guy who's been through that, why it's so hard to be a defensive catcher, do that job, and then go up and hit?
Yeah, absolutely. What he's done this year is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it is. I mean, that's because it hasn't been done. So, I mean, one or two other guys have been in that area, but I think he broke the record, didn't he? Am I correct in that? Home runs for catcher of the season?
Yeah, he's broken it so far going into the last weekend.
I mean, how do you beat Johnny Bench? I mean, that's incredible. And he did it. Let's not forget to mention that he has done that in a ballpark that is not a home run hitter's ballpark. And, right?
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy. And you guys asked me about, well, why is it so hard for a catcher? Well, because a catcher is the most demanding job on the field. Our first responsibility is not hitting. In other words, the way our game works is, I mean, the outfielders stand in the outfield, and maybe they don't so much today, but, you know, they're practicing their swing, they're looking at their swing in the outfield going, oh, I need to field this or that. And, you know, you got other guys, checking out tricks in the stands. Catchers don't have the luxury of doing that. And it's the most demanding, and we are in charge out there. So our mentality is, we have to take care of the pitcher, number one. That's our job. And that is an incredible job, in that, you know, you've got, well, today you have 14 or 15 guys in pitching. Today, back when I played, it was 10 or 11. But let's just say it's 10 only. Well, you've got to know not only the makeup of these guys from a pitch selection, and not only what they are their best pitches, but what are the best pitches going that game, or even that inning, because it could change throughout a game. It can change from the time you go from the bullpen to the mound. I've seen guys have the worst bullpen sessions. That's because that's why you see the starting catcher almost always catching the last part of the warm-up of the pitcher in the bullpen. He goes out there and finishes him off. That's to get a feel for what he's got. Well, oftentimes a guy will come in the game and he'll have absolutely nothing in the bullpen. And you're like, oh, long night tonight. And then all of a sudden the snaps on. As a catcher, you got to know that. Beyond that, what I think is what takes away from a catcher and is hitting prowess is the mental, the psychological knowledge. You have to be a psychologist to be a good catcher. I mean, you got to know not only what the guy has on the mound and pitches, but you got to know what his makeup is like. And, you know, you talk about leadership in business and leadership in families and leadership in, you know, that's a big word. But as a catcher, you know, leadership is getting the best out of the people that you're leading. And as a catcher, you're leading mainly the pitcher for starters. And that takes an immense amount of mental, physical, and emotional toll.
You're somebody who learned that leadership with their journey through baseball. You're actually a Phillies draft pick. You spent your 8 years in the minors. You're actually the only person who won championships in four consecutive years at four different levels, three of them in the minors. Talk to us about your journey to the majors. We've covered minor league baseball, the long bus rides. What was that experience like for you?
It was fabulous. I mean, I loved my journey in the minor leagues. It was, I think it was one of the best parts of my life, although it was a challenge. You know, I was drafted in the fourth round by the Phillies back in 78. And, you know, I went to a place called Helena, Montana. I mean, that's like 2,000 miles away from my home on the East Coast of Florida. And I went out there, and it was the first year they ever had a major league team. They treated us like we were kings. I mean, to tell you, they were so ecstatic. I mean, here's a bunch of, you know, Northwest country folks, Mountaineers, and here comes a bunch of ball players, and they were treating us like we were Hall of Famers. It was incredible.
And who was your roommate?
Well, I had a couple roommates, but one of them was Ryan Sandberg. And Ryan and I ended up being co-MVPs. Ryan got the players' vote, and I got the fans' vote at the end of the year. So that was pretty special. I led the team home runs and RBIs, and I was a serious prospect. I could throw. I could hit. things were on top of the world. And then I went through a series of three injuries that cost me a year and a half. And, you know, I went from being a prospect to a suspect with Phillies. I tore my ankle so bad that Dr. Marone, back then the Phillies doctor, told the organization that I may not walk again, let alone catch. So they basically used me as a hitter, as a kind of like an organizational guy. You have guys in minor leagues that are, you know, are prospects, and then you have most of the other guys are organizational guys. And you got to fill out a team so the guys that you want developing can develop. And I was used to the first baseman, DH. And eventually, after, 6 years, I said to the Phillies, which is a great organization. I loved the organization back then. I said, look, let's be men about this. I'm not gonna be a first baseman DH. I don't hit with that much power. I mean, I was a gap hitter, and in that year I led the team in home runs and still am in the top 8 or 10, I think, in all of Helena baseball in the rookie league there. But I said, you know, I got other things to do. I had an appointment to West Point. I had Ivy League opportunities for football and baseball. And so I had some smarts, and I just said, look, I'm not going to be these guys that dies in, you know, in minor league baseball, because I feel like there's so much more I can do with life outside of that. So, you know, they said they were fine with that. And they understood that I didn't need them, and they really didn't need me. So they sent me out shopping, and I signed with the Mets, who gave me the opportunity to catch 50% of the time back in Class A ball when I had been to Double A with the Phillies. And you know, I started in Lynchburg, Virginia, and that was just an unbelievable year. That's where the Mets were beginning to build that great group of guys. Doc Gooden had 300 strikeouts, Lenny Dykstra. We had countless guys play in the big leagues off that team. And you know, the next year, as you guys mentioned earlier, I happened to be a guy that won championship ring in consecutive years at each level of professional baseball in the same organization. And people tell me that's not been done before. I'm like, okay. I mean, I didn't bring that up, but I had some guys that were, you know, with these historians in baseball bring this up to me. Like, well, no, just in the right place at the right time. And, you know, it wasn't me. I mean, I contributed for sure, But, you know, it was a great run there with the Mets. And so that's why I have such fond memories in my legs.
And that run culminates with one of the things that was the impetus for us thinking about you, which is ESPN over the last few weeks has run a four-part series, documentary on the 86 Mets called Once Upon a Time in Queens, which for a lot of us brings back so many good memories. But also it is one of the most complicated, complex group of individuals and diverse group of individuals that you can picture on a team. And that's what made the special so good. But as somebody who was there, how do all of those different personalities mesh on a field and in a clubhouse?
Well, we didn't win again. So, you know, I've done a lot of speaking over the years and talking to the Corporate Association. They want to know about leadership and teamwork and all that. Well, one of the things I believe in is you've got to have character. And we had characters. But as you guys know, you know, we may not necessarily have much, you know, true character. I mean, we had some really crazy individuals. And, you know, for that 1 year, it was phenomenal. I mean, I was a rookie on that team. I backed up Gary Carter. And, you know, you asked me, how was that? It was crazy. I mean, it was literally, I mean, I kept my mouth shut, did my job when called upon. But, man, I tell you, it was unbelievable that team, I mean, we just dominated that year.
Well, not only did you dominate as hitters and pitchers, but apparently as boxers, because one of the things I remember about that team and that comes across in that special is that there were a lot of fights between the Mets and other players, and sometimes it looks like amongst their own teammates. One of them, you weren't involved necessarily in the fight that I can tell. But as a result, this was a game against the Reds. I think it was in July that I remember that Ray Knight's thrown out of the game, Kevin Mitchell's thrown out of the game. You hadn't started the game, but Gary Carter, Davey Johnson's running out of players, so he moves him to third. He moves you to catcher, and Roger McDowell and Jesse Orozco are switching between right field and pitching. What was that experience like?
Welcome to the 86 Mets. Truly. Am I echoing for you guys right now?
It's a little bit better, actually. It's
well, okay. Well, I turned you on. I can actually see you guys now.
Oh, you can see us.
On my computer.
There you
go. So I've got you guys on my phone here. You know, we're online through Zoom there, but I also have you. So I don't want to be sounding bad, but I just want to let you know I can see you now. And I don't need to see, especially one of you. No, I'm just kidding.
Believe me, there's a reason that
I think
we
he's talking about me.
There's a reason we do a radio show. I remind people that regularly. Unfortunately, now they can see us on a Zoom, so they realize there's a reason we do a radio show. But what can I do about that?
I resist it, but Jason keeps making me do it.
Yeah, I make Jeff smile.
But
I think it's great. I think it's great. You can see you guys. I love the Zoom video interviews. I think you're great, but. Sorry you can't see my beautiful face. I'd be making you all look really good.
Well, as a member of that team and as a rookie, I can't imagine. I would say text, but we didn't have text back then, or emails for that matter. But what do you write home about? What do you call your parents and say?
Oh, you don't. not in my family.
It's like when
I was raised by two very conservative, straightforward, going to church people. And so, you know, honest to tell you, Perlman wrote that book, The Bad Guys Won. And I don't know if you read that.
Yeah, but you
okay,
know.
Okay, well, that 30 for 30 was just a video of that book. And when my mom read that book, she said, oh, my God, I would have had a heart attack if I'd known that was going on around you.
She didn't ask you to autograph it?
No, she did not. I doubt she kept it. And then they haven't, you know, it's strange now you bring it up. They haven't seen that 30 for 30 yet. And they got all kind of recording devices and everything. But, you know, maybe there's a little paranoid.
They're worried about
seeing it.
They're worried about, you know, what they're going to find if they watch it.
You might want to cut out their sports package.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, yeah. It's up to them. You know, I mean, I know that I held pretty strong in who I was as an individual. And, you know, I caught some flack occasionally about that. And, you know, the book that Perlman wrote, actually one of the, you know, when they have co-authors and other people do the pre-reads and get quotes, one of them about me was, with the exception of, I can't quote figures I have in front of me, but with the exception of Gary Carter and that milk-drinking angelic Ed Hearn, the rest of the team is a bunch of scumbags. I mean, that's the way the guy gave the quote to Perlman. And I was like, okay, well, thank you. Angelic. Wow. Okay, thank you.
Well, I guess that'll go over. But, you know, one of the stories, on a more serious note with regard to parents, I mean, we saw the story with Keith Hernandez and the complex relationship he had with his dad. Yes. But one of the things that I had read about you, and correct me if I'm wrong, I hope I'm not, but is because Jason and I talk about fathers and sons and moms and sons and daughters and stuff like that a lot on the show, and how sports is related to that. And you happened, if I read right, your first major league home run was on Father's Day, and your parents had come to the game. If that's accurate, can you tell us what it was like to have that moment and have your parents there?
You guys just don't have enough time for me. I've got several podcasts I've been doing here, and I honestly forgot what ours was about. And I briefly looked at you guys at the Heart of Sports. I'm thinking, I think these guys want the substance that I'm about, the heart and soul of life in sports. But there again, you guys start out with the A6 Mets and all and play. I'm go with that too. But you are so right. Baseball is such a great teacher of life. And it is just, I mean, I could talk about that all day. My parents, I didn't start with the team. I came up in, I think it was May 8th. And my parents flew out to see me. And I didn't play. I think I went on a West Coast road trip. No, I don't know. It was quite a bit before I played. And they stayed with the team. It's crazy. I mean, it was probably 10 days and they're on the road with us. And then they came back on Father's Day. And, to hit a home run on Father's Day, especially, maybe some fathers and some athletes are so good that, or the athletes are so good that it doesn't matter if the dad's in prison or whatever, they're going to make it. I wasn't that case. I mean, my parents, and particularly my dad's, as it relates to sports, they went all out for us three kids, absolutely all out for us. They had a mom and pop print shop, and it just, for them to be there, and then a grounds crew guy, retrieves the ball for me and gives it to me in the locker room after the game. And I'm able to give that ball to my dad after the game. I mean to tell you, that was so, you are dead on. I hope you bring me back when we can talk about fathers and youth sports and things of that nature. Wow. That's just huge for me.
You have an open invitation to come back.
Jeff
and
I have a 4.5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. Jeff has a son who's at college now that he coached for like little league games. And so we will definitely have you back to talk more about that, because that's
let me bring you the full circle of life if you got time.
Yeah.
Can I run with this story about the home run Father's Day? So fast forward, and gosh, I'd have to look it up. I wrote a story about it, and it's just in my files. But I call it the circle life. And so I'm coaching my kid. And they're probably, gosh, they must have been about 10 at the time. And we always gave a ride to one of the better players on the team. And we picked this kid up. I think it was a Sunday. We were in the last few games. And but on Saturday, we had played on a field that was way too small for our kids. Maybe they were 12. But they hit like 4 or 5 home runs in this, smaller field than what they should have been on. And so I picked this kid up in the backseat. It's Cody, my son, named after Cody Carter Hearn, and this kid, Jake. Well, they got stuck talking about, they weren't talking to me. They were talking kind of quiet between themselves. And they're talking about, man, wouldn't that be great if we get to be on that field again? Well, then Cody says, yeah, man, Jake, you know what? This is Father's Day. And if we get on that field, I can hit a home run and give the ball to Dad, like he did for his dad back in 1986 when he's on the Mets.
Nice.
Well, it was just so sweet to be dropping in on that conversation upstate. We pull up to the field, we find our field, and no, it's like 480 to left and 560 to center. I mean, huge. I mean, they had no chance of it.
You're like, it's the thought that counts.
It was a beautiful thought. So I'm sitting there behind home plate. And my son comes up about third time, and he hits an absolute rocket to right center. And he ran a little better than me, but not much better. Yeah, he ran better than me. And he rounds inside the park home run. And they come out and high five. Well, there was no way anybody's hitting out of the park. They do that. And a couple more innings later, they had their little meeting afterwards. And I was not actually coaching now. I was sitting behind them plate in a little lawn chair. And I see Cody and Jake sprinting out of that after game meeting, post game meeting. And they sprinted back to me, and Cody's got the ball in his hands. They said, Dad, it took me 20 years. Well, I went 20 years, but I wanted to be able to give you this home run ball like you did for your dad. Oh,
I can only hope to have that one day. It's,
yes,
you know,
you do.
Did you get to do that for your dad?
Yeah,
did Jason hit a home run?
No, Jason was here's the deal. Jeff knows Jason's level of sports acumen revolves around his ability to speak into this microphone. He's had me try out for basketball teams and other stuff and just embarrass myself.
He won't be the one
regularly
throwing out the first pitch if we go to someplace and do
Jeff
that.
Jeff would be doing that
for us. You guys, for a couple guys you talk about, what that often talk about the heart of sports and really cool, beautiful things. You guys hear Buzz Chops pretty good.
You
keep leading me back into the sewer here with the Mets and all that.
To us, sports is the gateway to everything else. It's the relationships you have. It's the people that you can touch. And look, it gave you a platform. We've got like 5 more minutes, so we'll definitely have you back on to talk more. But I did want to ask you, you ended up writing a book about conquering life's curves. You've overcome cancer and kidney disease. And I read somewhere that you actually got personal letters from people when you wrote the book telling you about the impact that the book had with your story on them. Again, the sports platform that gave you this, what's it like for you to be able to have that impact on people?
All right. Gentlemen, I mean, it's going to be hard to maybe hear this, but, you know, I came to Kansas City, traded for a guy named David Cohen. He didn't do anything.
Nope, never heard of him.
Baseball, and, you know, and that's all I've heard, the worst trade in the city, and all that sort of thing. And then I lose not only my career, but I lose my health in a big way. And we'll talk about that someday. But you go full circle to the point where I honestly tell you that my baseball career was not the foundation to what I've been able to do since. It's battling in the depth of really, I mean, oh, you strike out 4 times in one game. All right, get your head on your butt. Let's go. Let's talk about real life. I mean, I tell people all the time, a lot of great things, but I'll tell you one thing that I've come to. A little old man came up to me about 15 years ago when I was speaking. He said, Mr. Hearn, you have been from the penthouse to the outhouse and back. And I mean, you've been back in a big way. And he caught me off guard. I was like, well, thank you. I mean, oh, yeah, I guess that's good. But later, as time went on, I got to thinking about that. And truthfully, you said about baseball being a platform. You know, God may have allowed that ground ball to roll through Bill Buckner's legs for the sake of Ed Hearn having the opportunity to do what I have done off the field. Because it gave me a little tiny bit of name. I'm not a big name guy. I only got two letters in my name. I'm only Ed. Right? I mean, a short career got cut off by an injury, but by golly, I have learned that it's not the penthouse at the World Series of Life where you grow. You guys stop laughing at me, damn it, I can see you. It's not at the penthouse of life. It's not at your World Series you grow. It's in the outhouse.
Yeah, it's when you're in the depths that you learn about yourself, you learn about other people,
exactly.
and you learn about the people that you've been able to influence along the way. And look, we would love to keep talking to you. Unfortunately, we'll have to cut it for today because we have the end of the show. But I mean, we would love to have you back. This is what sports is about. It's about the lessons people learn and the relationships they make and the life they can build afterwards. So we're thrilled for you. You've been able to build that. And we definitely would love to talk to you some more going forward.
Absolutely, man. No problem at all. I enjoy talking to not only people like you, but really your audience. Because today, you know, my speaking slowed quite a bit, and that was the juice of my life. I mean, I take 30, 40 pills a day, but you let me make a difference in somebody else's life because of where I've been. Nothing better. No better medicine for Ed Hearn than that.
Yeah, and we've talked to a lot of people who have written books, and for people that don't know, he has written a book called Conquering Life's Curves. And if you can, where can you get that book still?
Oh, and you go on Amazon, or you know, you can get it for $1.99, you know, in the old used section, or send $20 to the editor, www.bottomoftheninth.com.org.
Yeah, we're,
whatever.
We want to have you back one day to talk about that too. We're gonna have to leave it here, but Jeff, I'll let you get the last word.
I gotta ask one question, and hopefully we can talk to you about it again. So the Astros, another current event, Astros win the division again. We know that they're cheaters, but did they cheat in 86?
Of course. I mean, I can give you the picture.
Do you have the balls still?
He has a bag of balls.
Yeah. I can only find one right now. The guy, when they did that 30 for 30, the producer kept calling me, and he's like, I told him, I said, man, I've got a sanitary sock of those balls, you know, the Mike Scott thing. And then he kept calling me, find those balls, find the balls. I said, finally, he called me one time, and you know, he's after me about, did you find the balls? I said, dang it, dude, all you do is you call me about my scratched balls. I ain't doing the interview, so forget it.
And on that note, Ed, thank you so much for coming on. We really do want to have you back to talk more about fathers and sons, and there's so much that people can learn from you.
We appreciate the time, and wish you the best of luck, and look forward to talking again soon.
Absolutely, guys. You guys keep swinging in the meantime.
Thank you so much. Jeff, what a cool interview to have there, to talk to him, to hear his story.
He really is an inspirational guy.
I mean, I'm not the Mets fan like you are, were, and not, like that. So like that part of it, but like we learned so much about the people that we talk to, and his story is just one that's inspiring. We went a little bit
If somebody would have said a half hour would be too little, it was.
It definitely was. Any last thoughts? Because we got to sign off.
I don't think I could say anything better than what I just said.
That's the best way you can close. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.